Good morning. I call House Special Committee on Fisheries to order. Today is Thursday, April 4th, 2024, and the time is 10:05 a.m. We are meeting in the Max Grunberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. The staff assisting us today is Shelby with the Juneau LIO and Cheryl with House Records. The following members present is Representative Hemshute, Representative Carpenter, Representative Stutes, Representative McCabe, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to bring back House Bill 297, Sport Fish Angler Access Surcharge, and House Bill 294, Electronic Monitoring of Fishing Vessels, both by the governor as presented by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for the purposes of hearing public testimony. So we will now hear House Bill 297, and we will first open public testimony. And I'm seeing, is there anyone in the room who would like to offer a testimony in House Bill 297? Please state your name for the record. You'll have a few minutes because there's no one trying to jump in front of you.
Well, my name is Gary McCune. I live in Cordova, Alaska. I'll be testifying for myself. Electronic reporting, the way I understand it, surveillance is very...
This is the angler access.
Oh, geez, I forgot that. I thought it was going to be this one. But that the angler right. access, I don't have any problem with Ms.
All right.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I'll be up on the next one.
Okay.
My
Thank
mistake.
You for your testimony.
I didn't have enough coffee this morning.
Okay, moving online, I am not seeing anyone online for public testimony for 297. Is that confirmed? There is no one online. So we will now close public testimony on 297 Sport Fish Angler Access. For those watching online who did not have an opportunity to call in, you can submit your written testimony to house.fisheries@akleg.gov, and it will be uploaded to the public record. So we did send out an email that was provided by the department, and you have a copy of the license and fees surcharge amounts as provided by the department. I put those on everyone's desks to be able to see what the total fee would be. And I'm opening up for further questions from committee members on this bill. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I think it looks pretty reasonable, these fees. It's probably very reasonable, actually, comparatively speaking. So I'm pretty supportive of this. Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So I'm going to have an amendment for this bill, just so everybody knows. And I would like to add a dollar to the $4 surcharge for sport fishing, because I think we need to do a new one of these. We haven't done one in over 20 years. This is the economic impacts and contributions of sport fishing in Alaska. But I don't want it to take away from the very important ideas that the commissioner had for what to do with that $4 for non-boating stuff, but I do think we need to do a new economic impact study. And this has all regions of Alaska, and we haven't done one in a long time. And I think we need to know what is happening with our sport fisheries after COVID. It's, everybody talks about COVID and pre and post COVID, and we haven't really done a study. So I think that sport fishing provides some economic impact, whether it's more or less, I don't really care. I just think we need to know whether it's more or less than commercial fishing or subsistence fishing. It doesn't really matter. We just need to have the data so we can have a logical debate. So that's amendment is forthcoming.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, who is that put out by? Is that put out by the department?
Yes.
Oh, great. Perfect.
And I actually, through the chair,
Representative McCabe.
I actually think this is, it's better coming from the department than an industry group. It went So if we can fund it through sport fish licenses, because it's part of sport fish, the sport fishermen should be excited for it, actually. So.
Representative Hemshoop.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Probably inappropriate to ask this now, but will we have a chance to ask the commissioner when that amendment comes up, if that's helpful?
And we do have the commissioner now, so you can choose now, but also if you want to wait, we will have an opportunity.
I could pose it as a hypothetical.
Representative Hemshoop.
Okay. Through the chair, I'd like to ask the commissioner for a sport fish study. Do we need to increase by a dollar, which I'm not opposed to doing, but I just want to make sure that this is the mechanism and the way we would do it. How was it done 20 years ago? And
yeah. Lots of money.
Welcome, Commissioner, to the table. Please state your name for the record.
I just walked up 6 flights of stairs after walking halfway up the the Mount Juno yesterday. So let me catch my breath. I'm Doug Vincent Lang for the Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fishing Game. So if you could repeat the question, I'm sorry.
Sure. Through the chair, my question is, to do a sport fish study as was done 20 years ago, would the increased fees help to conduct such a study? And do you have capacity issues, or what do you think about adding a dollar onto these fees to be able to conduct a study on sport fish benefits?
Through the chair, so there's been a lot of requests for us to do an updated economic survey. We just haven't had the funding to do that. It's competing against other projects. So this would provide that funding. I'm not sure in the single year whether we'd have enough. We'd have to build that dollar sub-account up to a point where we could actually do that work and contract portions of it out to, like, McKinley Associates or somebody else to do some of that work. But I would imagine, just rough calculations here, we're dealing with 1/4 of whatever we're going to accumulate here. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that should be more than sufficient over a year or two to do that survey and then periodically update it over like a 5 or 10 year period of time.
So it would be a through the chair follow-up. It'd be a continuing, continuing stream to be able to maintain the information in there.
That would be my intention if this was part of a surcharge that wasn't going away, that we would build this up over time so that we could periodically conduct it.
Thank you.
I do have some questions on pertaining to the bill. This does not have a sunset date, as we have seen in previous increases to the sport fish license. Can you provide us justification for that, what the plan is, and also just provide the committee a little bit of history? A few years ago, we had the sunset for the hatchery surcharge, was complete. Can you tell us what the total was on the sport fish license at that time, and just provide a little bit of history of what that looked like?
So the surcharge that was done on hatcheries was done to pay off a bond. So it was calculated to basically pay that bond off over time. And once the bond was paid off, the surcharge disappeared by statute. It didn't have a sunset date per se. It just was dependent upon our ability to pay that bond off. And we, given the license sales at the time, we paid it off earlier than we thought. This one does not have a sunset on it because we don't see the need for angler access disappearing in 5 years or 8 years. We'd like to see that continue. But again, just like any piece of legislation, if the legislature wasn't happy with it, they could repeal it at any given time moving forward.
And did you have something to refresh my memory? Was that license, the total license, 26 or 27 for resident sport fish when the hatchery surcharge was there?
For the record, Joe Felkel, the surcharge amounts were all $5 additional dollars. So it would have been 29 for the resident annual sport fishing license.
Okay.
With the surcharge.
I'm just trying to get a feel of what Alaskans were accustomed to in the past and willing to pay for.
So all these surcharge amounts to the chair are just $5 less than what the hatchery surcharge was. So it's actually less than what they have been used to and what they did pay for the hatchery surcharge.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you. And maybe this is for the bill sponsor or for Commissioner or Joe, I don't know. But I've heard that Alaska pays less for fishing licenses than any other state, that the cost of Alaska fishing licenses are less than in any other state. Is that a fair statement?
Well, resident Alaskans get a fairly good deal on fishing licenses across the nations. I don't know, have the exact numbers in front of me. I don't think we're the lowest necessarily, but Alaskans, $25 to go sport fishing is a pretty reasonable price nationwide. So.
Follow up?
Nope, thanks.
Another question that I have, and I asked this in previous renditions of the bill because it brings it up in the legislation, and that is our relationship with Yukon Canada, that they can have licenses for the same cost as Alaskan residents. And I know that you have ongoing negotiations with them. Can you provide the historical justification of why we have that relationship to offer them really the benefit that Alaskans receive?
Yeah, it was kind of goes back in history for a long time ago. I think it was Governor Murkowski originally decided that it was a friendship effort with the Yukon government, since they were landlocked and they didn't have access to marine waters in southeast Alaska. So a lot of people came down to fish in Skagway and they were paying non-resident fees. So he worked out an agreement with the premier at that point in time to offer them a non-resident license for the price of a resident license. So, and you know, that has stayed in place. I know there was some consideration during the COVID years to repeal that, but that's stayed in place for a long time now.
Do we know how many Canadians are utilizing that license? Because I've heard that there's a lot of other concerns in Southeast, and Representative Kamshu can speak to this much more eloquently than I can, but there's been a lot of concerns about abuses of the system of the fishery. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's directly with this license, but just wanting to provide an up-to-date justification to keep this in place, because I think this is part of our responsibility to make sure that we are putting Alaskans first and holding accountable to those who maybe don't have access to certain fisheries. Can you provide any insight on that?
Yeah, we could get you the number of licenses that are sold, but, you know, there's 35,000 Yukoners, I'm guessing, someplace on the order of this is in the hundreds of licenses that are probably sold for people that are going down to Skagway. It's not everybody in Skagway is going down to buy a resident sport fishing license. And again, this is more of just a fairness, not a friendship gesture across the border. And the governor and I were just in Yukon talking to the premier of the White House, and he expressed his appreciation for allowing that opportunity for marine access to their anglers. So I don't think it affects conservation or allocation in any major significant ways, especially since almost everybody's going on a Skagway. And they're not allowed for personal use fishing. So.
Okay. Do Alaskans receive any benefit on the flip side into Canada?
That is one of the things we've opened those negotiations up. We think it might be fair to have some collateral ability to buy a resident license into Canada.
And how long has Canada been enjoying this benefit?
Oh, 15, 20 years since Governor Murkowski was around.
I think it is time that maybe there's some reciprocity. Representative Carpenter, did you have a question? Okay, I can't tell when your pen is. Any Representative Stutes?
Thank you. Through the chair, Madam Chair. I'm looking at this form, and this is way off the subject almost. What is marine fishing?
That's the sport fishery that occurs in marine waters off of Alaska. So anything that occurs in saltwater, like the charter boat outfits, anybody's got a private boat in southeast Alaska is going out marine fishing.
Thank you. I've never heard that term, so appreciate it.
Any further questions? Okay.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Seeing none, we will set House Bill 297 aside, and we will now take up House Bill 294, Electronic Monitoring. And we will now open up public testimony on House Bill 294, electronic monitoring of fishing vessels. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on electronic monitoring? Now's the time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Jerry McCune. I live in Corova, Alaska. I fish out of the Copper River, and I'll be testifying for myself. The UFA testified on this earlier one time, and it's the cost is really high, $17,000, you know, for depending on how you have the cameras on your boat. Well, that's more money than I made last year after insurance and fuel and everything else. And I do have another point, too, that I think is valid that was said earlier. The Board of Fish has a few fishermen on it, but not most of the people on the Board of Fish don't have a rounded statewide understanding of fisheries. So anybody can put a proposal in, and I don't want to be like accusing anybody of anything, but there's people out there who will put a proposal in on a fishery just to make them spend money. And so if you put this on like a set netter in Cook Inlet, for example, they wouldn't be able to do it. They can't, they don't have 12 volt, they don't have any way to run it. And I looked up 12 volt cameras. I got one in my engine room, and there's none that I can see is made for outside right now. Maybe in the future, the cost may come down, but right now it's prohibited. And a lot of people wouldn't be able to go fishing with the cost to be able to put this on your boat. So I haven't seen the Board of Fish ever put observers on the salmon fisheries. That has a whole set of different problems that doesn't relate to the bill. But anyway, I oppose the bill as a small boat owner.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So I will now move online, and we will go to Ernie Weiss from Anchorage. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the House Fisheries Committee. For the record, my name is Ernie Weiss. I live in Anchorage, and I'm employed by the Aleutians East Borough as Natural Resources Director. I'm here today to testify on House Bill 294. My colleague at the borough, fisheries analyst Charlotte Levy, submitted a letter, which you have dated February 20th, regarding HB 294. My main objective today is to bring your attention to that letter and hope you'll have an opportunity to look at it. Charlotte has been very involved, instrumental, in fact, in a project to bring EM to smaller vessels in federal Western Gulf groundfish fisheries, and has gained a lot of expertise in that process. Unfortunately, Charlotte is out of the country currently. She'll be back next week. I won't read the letter, but suffice to say the process was extremely involved and costly. Working with the North Pacific Fishery Observer Program and the Fishery Management Council and NIMS, and I believe she's got some important insights to provide the legislature if needed. And if you have a future hearing, I'm sure she would be happy to attend, share those insights, and frankly some of her concerns. That's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Chris Clemens from Seward. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hey, my name is Chris Clemens. I'm a board member for Concerned Area and Fisherman and on the UFA board. And I also fish out in Area M. there's a bunch of reasons why this wouldn't be very good for us. One, like Jerry said, is the cost is quite a bit right now. And another one is like the abundance of footage. Like, how are they going to monitor all this footage? I think there's only 3 or 4 guys that work at this place that monitor it. And you got 100 boats out there or more, and that's 100 days worth of footage, like 24-hour days. It'd take months, years to monitor all of it. Another thing is like the breakdowns. If the equipment breaks down, that there's not very many techs that can come out to fix it. And if they do come out to fix it, it could take weeks, which could result in a loss of a season if you're sitting at the dock waiting for your camera to be fixed. And then my last point is we have plenty of state troopers out there, and they did a really good job last year. They actually tightened up enforcement, and it seemed to be working pretty good. But those are the things I have to say, and if you have any questions, feel free to ask me.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Bob Murphy from Kodiak. If you could please state your name and affiliation from the record, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bob Murphy. I live in Kodiak. I am the Executive Director of the Concerned Area Fishermen and representing those members. CAMP, which was established about 40 years ago, has a membership that usually varies between 95 to 115 limited entry permit holders, which is about 80% of the active drift gill net fleet in Area M. We represent commercial fishermen throughout the Alaska Peninsula and Aleutian Islands, Kodiak, Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage, and the Mat-Su Valley, and various other locations. We have worked closely with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game over the years and have been very involved in a regulatory process at the Alaska Board of Fisheries. We are opposed to HB 294 because of the cost to each individual fisherman. There is significant cost to purchase the cameras and also fund the program to review video and video storage. The seafood industry is currently struggling with processes closing in many coastal communities, including Area M, and individual fishermen are struggling to survive with low fish prices. EM is cost prohibitive and does not better the management of any fisheries. There are several other difficulties with EM that can be problematic, such as camera malfunction and potential lost fishing time to migrating salmon, privacy issues not related to commercial fishing, and other issues. We are in full support of enforcement by the Department of Public Safety, which has a long history patrolling in Area M, and they have the tools to monitor this fishery. We ask that adequate funds and Area M enforcement priority by public safety occur to provide enforcement to prevent any illegal fishing activity and be more effective than any future EM program. In 2023, DPS did an excellent job enforcing the laws in Area M, and we hope it continues. We expect 100% compliance from our membership and all Area M fishermen to the rules and regulations that are in effect. Supporting public safety to do their job would be more cost-effective than an EM program that will force many commercial fishermen out of business. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the House Fisheries Committee for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Kathy Hansen from Juneau. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, my name is Kathy Hansen. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please continue.
I'm the Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska Fishermen's Alliance, also known as CEFA, representing our 320-plus members involved in the salmon, crab, and shrimp fisheries of Southeast Alaska and longline fisheries in the Southeast and the Gulf of Alaska. I also serve as a member of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council Partial Coverage Fishery Monitoring Advisory Committee, and there's some lessons to be learned from that process. There's many issues to be considered, ranging from costs and funding to the fishermen in the department, confidentiality of data, having the necessary workforce to repair EM units quickly so fishermen don't lose major amounts of time during fast-paced fisheries or at the peak of the season, that the Board of Fish does not insert an EM program requirement as part of an amendment to a proposal that was submitted, which would not allow the full public process of advisory committees and the public to testify. And if this legislation is to move forward, it needs to be amended at Section 1, AS 16.05050, A13, and Section 2, AS 16.05251A13. Both sections list criteria the Board of Fish has to consider for an onboard observer program, but does not carry those same considerations forward for an EM program. At a minimum, that needs to be fixed. And I would also suggest that a requirement be set up that if an EM program is authorized by the Board of Fish, if this moved forward, that an advisory committee of agency and affected fishermen work together to develop the program. The Southeast Drift Gillnet Fishery is getting an observer program put on it, and there'll be a pilot program in 2024 for marine mammals. That budget is upwards of $230,000. They're looking to do, they hope to do mainly EM, but they are looking at both options. The simple takeaway is a successful EM program requires buy-in by the fleet, a lot of pre-planning, starting with the objective and ending with data review and how the data will be used. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we will, Ms. Hansen, we do have a question from Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Hansen, I missed what you said the cost was going to be for the 2024 observer program for the Southeast Drift Gillnet.
I'm not sure if it's a yearly cost or if it's the cost of the program, which they're looking for it to be a 2 to 3 year program. It's upwards of $230,000 is the soft number that I've been given.
Follow up through the chair. That's the state's cost.
That's federal. It's a federal program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Next, we go to Jared Danielson from Port Muller. If you could please state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Yeah, hi, my name is Jared Danielson, and good morning, Madam Chair, House Fisheries members. I am here to express my strong opposition to the proposal to implement electric monitoring on fishing vessels. As someone deeply involved in the fishing industry, I'm concerned about the potential negative impacts this measure could have. One of the key issues with electric monitoring is the high costs associated with its installation and maintenance. These costs would impose a significant and devastating financial burden on fishing vessel owners, especially smaller operators like myself, who already face numerous economic challenges. Such expenses could threaten the viability of many fishing businesses and put operations at risk. Furthermore, it is troubling to note that this push for electric monitoring is driven by a small group with a specific agenda. This group does not represent the wider interests and needs of the fishing community, but rather seeks to impose their preferences without considering the practical implications for industry stakeholders in Area M now or other fisheries in the future. It is important to highlight that there are already effective enforcement mechanisms in place to ensure compliance with fishing regulations. Implementing electric monitoring would therefore be unnecessary, adding more bureaucratic hurdles without providing any substantial benefits in terms of enforcement, and a huge financial cost when one considers the total cost of the program, including purchasing cameras, as well as hiring staff to review and provide storage video. In conclusion, I urge you to oppose House Bill 294 in its current form. Instead of burdening the smaller commercial operations with additional costs and regulations, we should focus on supporting the industry through these challenging times and ensuring that existing enforcement measures are effectively utilized and supported. Thank you for your time and considering my concerns.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Darren Gilman from Cordova. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Darren Gilman. I'm from Cordova, Alaska, and I fish Area E and also Bristow Bay, and I operate, I fish 3A halibut as well. And I just wanted to call in to oppose HB 294 for a couple multitude of reasons, said by Kathy Hansen and Jerry McCune. But yes, it would be costly for a small-time drift gillnetter to operate. Also, a confidentiality of data. I think that's kind of intrusive on a small vessel, and not sure how that would be implemented. But that's pretty much all I have to say. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we go to David Polushkin from Wasilla. Please state your name for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee. For the record, my name is David Polushkin. I have fished in Area M since 1986. I oppose House Bill 294, EM monitoring bill. I currently have EM on my boat for fishing halibut and peacock fishery. We must call in ahead of a trip to see if we have to have our cameras on. If we do, and during the trip, if the equipment quits working and can't be fixed, we must quit fishing and go in to have it fixed. Does the state envision similar type of a program? If it is full coverage, it'll be cost prohibitive to even fish. If it will be partial coverage, we have fish and wildlife troopers to for enforcement in fisheries. That is the most effective way to enforce compliance in a fishery without driving the fishery out of business. In this bill, it looks like the state wants the fishermen to pay for the hardware and the data processing. Each unit is $17,000 plus the data processing and technical field work will cost around $750 a day. Where will the technicians be stationed? The data costs are in the NOAA Fisheries Observer Program annual report published in June of 2023. Who will have access to the data? How long will the data be kept? The fishing industry is struggling now with the market conditions and everything else. This will add a huge burden on the industry. If this bill passes and whoever wants to shut down a fishery, this bill will do that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm looking to see if there is anyone else online. Seeing none, we will now close public testimony on House Bill 294. For those watching online who did not have an opportunity to testify, you can submit your written testimony to house.fisheries@akleg.gov, and it will be uploaded to the public record. Do members have any more questions on House Bill 294? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I don't have a question. I just have a couple comments. I notice on page 5, line 18, it says requiring electronic monitoring and observers aboard fishing vessels, which is a concern. You know, when we spoke with the commissioner earlier, it was either or, but that's not what this bill says. Also, it appears that there should be a written determination of some sort that an onboard observer program of some sort, whether it be a human or a camera, needs to be determined and the appropriate homework done before they put this bill in place. I just think that this bill is a little premature and that the appropriate homework hasn't been done in advance of presenting this bill.
Thank you, Representative Stutes. Representative Himshue.
Thank you, Chair Vance. I do have some questions, but I'll just start by saying I agree with a lot of what Representative Stutes just said. I think my questions are for the commissioner.
Commissioner, welcome back to the table. If you could please state your name for the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Representative Himshue. Yeah.
Thank you. Through the chair, Commissioner. Similar to the questions that were just asked or statement that Rep. Stutes made, do fishermen get to choose? Like, we're being asked to approve something, and I asked in the meeting on Tuesday, who's going to make the regulations? Will the fishermen be included in that? My questions now are a little narrower. Will it be a choice for fishermen to choose between a human observer and electronic monitoring?
The way that it works in the federal program is it's usually a regulation done by the council. And then fishermen are involved in that through that process in determining whether that's going to be an observer program or an electronic monitoring program. Sometimes there's both programs on board a vessel. For instance, observers aren't awake 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So there's periods of time where the observer aren't on the deck and then electronic monitoring is covering that. I think that's why it says and on there, that the option is for both or either one. I think if you're going as a board proposal, there would probably be a requirement to do some kind of enforceability on a fishery, for instance, again, Area M. And I think through the public testimony process, they would determine whether that would be observers or electronic monitoring. And that would be a board decision to implement that. Which of the two?
Follow up.
Thank you. Follow up through the chair. So I'm also confused about, you know, there are lots of guidelines around human observers, and I don't see where the guidelines are built out for EM. And the guidelines for human observers are in statute. So it feels like we would need statute for EM as well, and it's not here.
I would think the problem we're doing is kind of the chicken and the egg right now, because we can't do electronic monitoring because it's not in the statute. So before we can actually do a lot of work on developing the regulatory package associated with it, we need to have the tool in the toolbox. So we decided to come and ask whether or not there was interest from the legislature to add this tool in the toolbox prior to spending a lot of time in developing the actual regulatory structure around something that we don't have in the toolbox right now yet.
Follow up?
And I could imagine a process potentially through the chair where you would establish some of these guidelines or regulations or statutes in to get ready to implement EM. So this is probably my last question, but I'm hearing a lot from fishermen about the expense of this. And if you have a low dollar operation, especially with the depressed prices we have right now, I'm hearing $17,000 over and over again is the minimum that it would cost to do this. And then we don't have technicians everywhere. Like, there are just so many barriers. Is there a way that the state would pay for the electronic monitoring?
Well, that would require a fiscal note from you guys to do that. You know, I think when you're comparing the price, what you're hearing is that would be the price of implementing electronic monitoring, but it doesn't compare it to what would you do if you actually had an observer program that was implemented that the board could currently do. So, you know, I think you heard the costs associated with the marine mammal observer program that's being toyed about for Southeast Alaska. It's not observers on board vessels aren't free, and they're also passed on to the fishermen. So I think the board would take that into consideration as part of their discussion. They always have to consider the economic cost of fishermen. They'd weigh the observer versus the electronic monitoring program and make a decision.
So, Commissioner, I have some questions around technology and things like that, because it sounds like this is less data-driven and more concerns about bad actors and an enforcement mechanism. And one of the concerns is if you have the use of EM with all the video technology, is who's going to be able to review that and really utilize the data? Is there technology that can be implemented where to be able to run through all of this video data instead of having a person having to monitor that?
Yeah, National Marine Fisheries Service is going through that right now with the entire program, and they're trying to incorporate artificial intelligence so that a lot of that can be done through computer programs to figure out what species apportionment and sizes and whether or not fish are being discarded. I do want to – there is an enforcement component of electronic monitoring, but there is also a data piece of it. So to know if you can distinguish – and NIMS is getting close to that, what species is being thrown overboard, that gives you better accountability of what's being discarded at sea, which is an important element of sustainable management. And also, it allows us to ensure that if there is mandatory retention, that the fish are retained on board that vessel so they can be sampled at the port site for genetic composition. For instance, an area that's critically important to know what the genetic composition of those fish are, whether they're coastal Western Alaskan or Russian.
That's helpful. Yeah. The other question that I have is regarding the use of drones. We've had a lot of conversation in transportation of how DOT is utilizing this technology to be able to see things the way that they didn't before through technology. And I was wondering if the department was looking at the use of drones for management, for instance, Area M, where you could get a bird's eye view of, you know, the runs, you know, for assessment, you know, for some of the concerns that you just mentioned. Is that something that the department is looking at? Because maybe that could offer a different mechanism that you wouldn't have to employ the use of these cameras on each vessel. You could have a bird's eye view.
Yeah, we're working through the drone technology right now. Unfortunately, drones are all line of sight. So, you know, it's hard to be out watching fishing vessels within line of sight with a drone. But, yeah, I think there are technologies out there. And, for instance, we're looking at it now for Sitka herring. Is there a way that we can use drones in those cases? But we've got to be very careful so that we stay within line of sight and control of that because of aircraft restrictions that the federal government has on the use of drones. But the technology is expanding, and certainly we're interested in it.
Representative Hemshoop.
Thank you, Chair Vance, for another opportunity. I want to go back to this chicken or egg question. So through the chair, I've read the statutes surrounding human observers. Mm-hmm. Were those created after you put humans on board? And then you said, okay, now we need to look at how intrusive they are or impacts like scheduling and scope of activities and that kind of thing. Or yep. Did you make the statutes and then put the humans on board?
I'll have to get back to you on that. I wasn't part of that program when it was originally required. I think it was really basically put under state statute because we had federal programs and we had parallel fisheries. And to comply, to maintain management control of those fisheries, we needed a federal state statute that basically mirrored the federal statute.
Follow up. Thank you, through the chair. In the public testimony today, we heard people talking about we've had some pretty robust enforcement, and that's a comfort to me. I'm glad to hear that. Is the electronic monitoring for the purposes of enforcement or for the purposes of research? What's it for?
Some of both, as I explained before. I think there's an enforcement piece. We have mandatory retention. You determine whether those vessels are complying with that. But more importantly, it allows us to make sure that the fish that are caught by fishermen, if we need to sample them on shore, that we have that representative sample of what's being caught on board that vessel for genetics, age, and length, or sex. So.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. This is just kind of an FYI, speaking only for myself, Commissioner, that when Representative Hemshute asked about maybe the state paying for it, and you suggested that you would then have to come to the legislature with a fiscal note, speaking for myself, I would be way more likely to vote in a positive way for additional money for the Department of Public Safety than I would for a fiscal note for electronic monitoring for the Department of Fish and Game.
Okay, that's fair.
Representative McCabe.
Isn't it a shame we need this at all? I mean, if the fishermen were as concerned as they should be about the resource, then maybe they would be following the biologist's recommendations and we wouldn't need electronic monitoring or observers, or increased budgets to the DPS to monitor, or NMFS and the Coast Guard flying C-130s, you know, if people would just sort of follow the law.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. There's been a lot of talk about Area M. Is there something in this bill that is singling out Area M for the use of electronic monitoring?
No, it's just I just use this as an example of how the board came to the discussion of could they put electronic monitoring on a fishery, and the fishery that they were discussing at the time was Area M. So I've used that consistently. There are other fisheries in the state that have mandatory retention. For instance, in Southeast Alaska, the same fishery often goes on mandatory retention of king salmon. And we need to know how many king salmon are caught in those same vessels for treaty obligations, because there's incidental mortality rates that we have to report back on. So there's all kinds of different things that we need to know about fisheries that have obligations to have complete accountability for harvest.
Follow up, thank you. So the bill does not address where in the state electronic monitoring could be used, but affords the department the ability to determine at a later date where electronic monitoring would be used. Is that correct?
Yeah. Basically, it would go through the board process.
Thank you.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you. I just want to make one more comment through the chair. And I love the hypothetical idea that we would all follow the law, but it would be great if nobody went faster than 55 miles per hour. It would be great if no one ever felt compelled to steal a bike. Those would be wonderful. And I think 99.9% of the fleet are following the rules, but we do need to call out that 0.1% that's not. And I'm grateful to DPS for their work on it and happy to hear that it's working. Thanks.
So if I just have one closing comment, I think the department has accomplished what it's wanted to do with having this discussion, because I think right now we were faced with the only tool in the toolbox is observers. And we heard opposition in some cases to have observers, especially in small vessels. So we wanted to start this discussion about what electronic monitoring would look like, and if you wanted to have that discussion with the toolbox. So If it doesn't get added right now, we'll continue working with the federal government to improve it. But at the end of the day, we think it remains a tool that should be added to the toolbox. If we want more regulations associated with it, that's fine. But I would hate to be a boat operator that would have to be forced, especially a small boat operator, that would be forced to take on an observer program that without a consideration of potentially a cheaper option or a different option. So,
thank you, Commissioner. I think this is a worthy discussion to have as well, to get an understanding of what all is involved when we're looking at the federal fishery and the issues of bycatch. People are wanting more EM coverage and for accountability purposes, because there's a concern of the resources Representative McCabe mentioned. And we've heard that from Alaskans, especially, you know, in the Gulf where we don't have as much coverage. But when it comes to our Alaskan fisheries, people feel that the fishermen feel that they're being targeted, and this would be a heavy burden and punitive, especially in the small boat fishermen. So I think that we need to flesh out really what this should look like. I like the recommendation of having an advisory committee with the fishermen. But on the flip side of the non-commercial side, mm-hmm. I'm also hearing concerns regarding the sport fish, the personal use fishermen, and that accountability of what's happening there, where there is no logbook required. There is no accounting of how many fish are taken in the rivers and what's happening to our king salmon. And that is an issue of concern for the resource as well, and accountability, because as you know, on the peninsula with the Kenai and the Kisilau rivers, there's been a frequent request for more enforcement, because there are people who are not Alaskans who are taking advantage of that resource. And there are hundreds of boxes shipped out of our salmon that is supposed to be prioritized for Alaskans. And that's a growing concern. So I like to look at this whole conversation about protecting the resource, having the available data, and the enforcement on a holistic scale, so that we're treating every fisherman equally, whether that's personal use, subsistence, commercial sport, that we're looking at the whole package. So for this bill in specific, I think that the fishermen are asking for more time. Because the technology, the availability isn't there, and to further develop this plan, because it's much too broad. And my concern is giving this authority to the Board of Fish. And I understand you wanting to utilize the process because it is robust, but it is my intent to keep the Board of Fish an allocative body, and you as the commissioner and the Department of Fish and Game as the management body. And I think that is a shared concern and mindset. So this is something that needs to have a lot more discussion among the users as to what this program could look like, and the possibility of timing, just because I've heard that they can't even get the equipment for several years because of what's going on globally. So thank you for just having this conversation. And I hope that everyone who has concerns, they can still send in their written testimony. We would love to have your insight about this to be able to put on the public record, because the commissioner can use this for ongoing conversations.
Well, and thank you for having the conversation. It's good. Regarding, I just want to add in one thing. I share your concern about accountability in recreational fisheries. We've instituted a kind of a research program to figure out how we can take that cell phone technology that Oregon and Washington are using for in-season reporting and potentially apply that to recreational non-chartered outfits in freshwater, and especially in a lot of personal use fisheries. There's no reason you couldn't report on your cell phone before leaving the site of the Kenai River dip net fishery. It's a little harder in Chitna because there's not a cell tower there yet, but there's no reason you couldn't do that. So we're getting closer to have better accountability for those freshwater fisheries through daily reporting through a cell phone app.
Thank you so much. So we will now set House Bill 294 aside, and that concludes our business for today. The House Special Committee on Fisheries will meet again at a date determined by the calendar, because we are going to have a robust schedule next week. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 10:55 a.m.